Dear sisters and brothers in the Dharma, Sukhihontu. Sukhihontu means may you be well and happy. Okay. And so today, I would like to share with you one sutta from Majjhima Nikaya. Because I was told this group has very good Dharma knowledge. Therefore, I have to talk a little bit deep, so not to disappoint you. Okay. So this Majjhima Nikaya 37, the destruction of the craving. So and the Buddha taught this sutta in Savatthi, and this sutta was expounded to the king of the gods. We call Sakka. And Sakka is not ordinary person. He was stream enterer, a noble one. Okay. And since I mentioned this Sakka, the king of the gods, I would like to explain a little bit the cosmology of Buddha's teaching, Buddha's discovery. In the cosmology of Buddha, we have a universe consists of 31 planes of existence. And this 31 planes of existence can be divided into three. The below one we call sensual plane, and the middle one we call material plane, the upper one we call immaterial plane. So the sensual plane, including human beings and the gods, all the heavenly beings, we call gods, and Sakka also stay in that heaven. And also under the human realm, there are animal world, hell beings, and hungry ghost. So these are the places that we, if we are not out of cycle of rebirth, these are the place we will go round and round again. So when a person go round and round in this sensual plane or material plane or immaterial plane of existence, then we call going round the cycle of rebirth. And to be able to reborn in the material plane of existence, one must have jhana, concentration, jhana, absorption, and maintain that jhana during dying moment. Only then one can reborn in the material plane of existence. And immaterial plane, then one must have immaterial jhana in order to be reborn there. Okay, so this three, we call 31 plane of existence, is called one universe in the teaching of the Buddha. And the Buddha only arises in this universe, not other universe. So in this sense, we are lucky. We are lucky to be able to reborn in this universe, to be able to expose to the teaching of the Buddha. Okay, and this the Sakka, the god, the king of the gods, one day he came down from the heaven and asked a Buddha a question. So he asked, he said, when he came down, he paid respect to the Buddha, bowed down three times, and respectfully he asked. He said, Venerable Sir, how in brief is a monk liberated in the destruction of craving? One who has reached the ultimate goal, ultimate security from bondage, one who has foremost among gods and humans. This Sakka is very clever. So he asked the question in brief only, not in detail, in brief, because he's already noble person. He's a stream enterer. So he said, how in brief is a monk liberated in the destruction of craving? Because he knew craving is the origin of all suffering. So how to destroy the craving so that one can reach the goal, the ultimate goal, the end of all suffering? Isn't this very important question? This important question, right? And Buddha answered him, here, King of Gods, a monk has heard that nothing is worth adhering to. Nothing is worth attached to. When a monk has heard that nothing is worth attached to, he directly knows everything. Can you comprehend what Buddha trying to say? Okay. So, what is everything? When he knows nothing is worth attached to, then he directly knows everything. What is this everything? In another sutta, Buddha said, eyes and form, sounds and ear, nose and smell, tongue and taste, body and tangible, mind and mental objects. These are all. This is everything. What does it mean? Okay. So when I come to contact with pleasant, agreeable form, owing to that pleasant contact, eye contact, then pleasant feeling arises in one. We feel very pleasant. When the pleasant sound come to contact with the ear, then we feel very pleasant. Or when your tongue contact with delicious food, you feel pleasant. And when your body touch something very soft, you feel very pleasant. Pleasant feeling arises in you. And when you think of something fantasy, then pleasant feeling arises in you. So when pleasant feeling arises in one, dependent on pleasant feeling, what arises? According to dependent origination, the formula of dependent origination. Dependent on feelings, what arises? You have 20 years background, Dharma knowledge, so you should be able to answer me. Dependent on feeling, pleasant feeling. Okay, let us forget about what Buddha said. Your experience. When there's pleasant feeling in you, what comes after the pleasant feeling?
Craving.
So we don't have to quote what Buddha said. According to our own experience, when there's pleasant feeling, we want it, right? We want it more and more. So one last after the pleasant feeling. We don't stop that pleasant feeling, and we don't hope it will pass away. Instead, we hope this pleasant feeling, we want it more and more. So we last after this pleasant feeling. This is called craving. So will the craving stop there? Stop there or not? Never. Never. So this craving will intensify. So long you do not contemplate impermanent of craving, this craving will intensify into what?
Clinging.
We call clinging, upadana, clinging. And this cling, we have two types of clinging. One is called clinging to sensual pleasures. In this case, this person, because of pleasant eye contact, ear contact, nose contact, tongue contact, body contact, mental contact, then pleasant feeling arises, but he cannot, a pleasant feeling leads to craving, and he cannot stop at the craving, then it leads to intense craving we call clinging. So he clings to these sensual pleasures. Not only he clings to these sensual pleasures, he also identified this clinging as myself, I, mine. Am I right? Do you cling to that? Do you identify your clinging as I, mine, myself? Yes or no? Yes. So we have two types of clinging. Not only we cling for sensual pleasures in order to satiate us, we cling to that, but we also identify that clinging is I, mine, myself. Therefore, in this case, we have two types of clinging here. When clinging arises, we cling to sensual pleasures and we identify clinging as myself. And in order to satisfy your clinging, when the clinging arises in the mind, do you perform any mental karma or not? Yes or no? Is it any mental karma involved?
Yes.
If you stop at the mental level?
Not
to
stop.
It's not going to stop. Okay. Some people say no. Whatever defilements that arise in the mind, even you don't put into action, the karma still committed. You still commit the mental karma. So the mental karma is there already. Okay? But for somebody, because they do not develop their mind, so they cannot stop at the mental level. So in order to satisfy his clinging, his craving, what should he do? Act. We have to act, right? We have to do something. Something you crave for, you want to get it. So you have to do something to get it. Only then you feel satisfied. And this act is called bodily karma. Somebody through bodily action, somebody through verbal action. So if you get it from verbally action, this is called verbally karma. So when craving arises in a person, we perform first mentally karma. Secondly, if we cannot stop short at the mental karma level, then we perform bodily karma or verbally karma. You may think, I perform verbally karma, mentally karma, verbally karma, so what? Any karma performed, whether good or bad, whether mentally, bodily, or verbally, leave behind karmic potentiality. We call karmic energy or karmic seed. This karma are seldom discussed in USA. Therefore, I want to take this opportunity to talk what is seldom talked in USA. Okay? So when this karma is left behind the energy, but where is stored? Where the karma stored? This karma will follow our mental stream, our consciousness stream, we call my stream. My stream is arising and passing away one after another. So this karmic energy will follow the mental stream continuously, never die out. And when the condition for this karma to ripen, then the karma just pop up. At this time, we do not call it karma. We call it effect. The effect sprout, just like a seed. Any seed you throw onto the land, this seed has the potentiality to sprout, right? Similarly, any karma one perform, whether mentally, physically, or verbally, leave behind karmic potentiality. We call karmic seed in one's mental stream, and when the time is favorable, this karmic will sprout, we call effect. And since it's done with craving, attachment, and clinging, so it's done unskillfully. Therefore, the effect is also unskillful, unwholesome, undesired. And this undesired effect and karma is always operating in our life. Now, sometimes in our life, we meet with something unpleasant, a misery, calamity. No, most probably it is the ripening of our unskillful karma done in the past. But we cannot see it, right? We cannot see it. Why we cannot see? Because our concentration and wisdom are not developed yet. Do you want to see what karma you have performed in the past that bring you into this existence? Do you want to see or not?
Yes.
Then you practice concentration. If you practice concentration, if you develop high level of concentration, you can see what's happening in the past. And if you understand what happened in the past that bring the result in this very life, then you can accept what is happening in this life without grudge, without complaint, without resentment. Then you will live more happy. You will live happily because you understand cause and effect already. Okay, so when craving leads to intense clinging, then dependent on clinging, becoming is all the action we have done that leave behind the energy, the seed in our mental stream. And we cannot say where the karmic store, where it store in the body, store in the eyes, in the head, in the brain. We cannot say like that. This seed, just like a seed thrown into the land, onto the land, we cannot say. Let's say a mango tree. A mango tree, when it's season, then the mango tree will bear fruit. So when it bear fruit, can we ask, before it bear fruit, where is store? Where the fruit store? We cannot say it's stored in the branch, on the root, or on the bark, and so on. We only say that when it's time. When it's season, then the mango tree just bear fruit. Similarly, where the karma store, we cannot say it's stored in the brain, in the heart, in the organ. No, we cannot say so. We only can say when the time ripens, when time ripens, it just bear its result, bear its fruit. So in Asia, we understand the law of karma very well. So whatever happened to us, we accept it with equanimity, without much resentment. And we restrain, you know, if something bad happened to us, we know it's a karma, it's a cause and effect. Then we restrain not to do the same thing again. Instead, we develop boundless compassion for ourselves and for others. Then we change ourselves for the better, right? We don't repeat the same pattern, make the same pattern mistake again and again. No. By understanding the cause and effect, then we accept everything happen with equanimity, without slight resentment. Okay. So, depend on clinging, becoming means karmic energy. So when this karmic energy ripens, then new birth. So Buddha said, dependent on becoming birth. New arising, we call birth. When there's birth, there is sorrow, there's aging, sickness, death, sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief, despair, thus arise the whole mess of suffering. Okay, so where the suffering starts? According to what I mentioned just now, where the suffering starts? Suffering starts with the craving. But we can move one step. Mm. Craving starts because first of the
object.
Yes, because of the contact of the eye with the pleasant object. Because of the contact of ear with the pleasant sound, because of the contact with the tongue with pleasant taste, or body with pleasant tangible, or mind with pleasant mental object. So because of contact, then proliferation. Okay. Therefore, but we cannot stop at a contact, right? We say, I better close my eye. No contact anymore. I close my ear, no contact. I don't want to smell, no contact. It's foolish to do like that, right? Then how to not to have so much impingement, so much contact in your life, then so that you will not be beset by all types of reformments come into the unguarded sixth sense doors. How to do it? We call guarding of one's sense door. How to guard? How to guard your sense door so that you can block as much as impingement. Okay. Buddha said, by anchoring your mind, or by keeping one meditation object with you all the time, or by keeping your mind with the four foundations of mindfulness. Keep your mind in the body. Okay? We call body kaya nupasana satipatthana, body contemplation, or keep your mind with your feeling. Whatever feeling, pleasant, unpleasant, neutral, you know it and contemplate impermanent. And keep your mind with the thoughts, citta nupasana. Keep your mind with the mind. Whatever mental state arise, don't identify them as myself, my thought, mind. Or keep your mind with mental object, the five aggregates or four noble truths and so on, or five hindrances. Whatever hindrances arise in the mind, mindfulness knows it. Then wisdom contemplate it as impermanent, so that your mind will not attach to all type of mental state, whether they are good or bad. So this is called guarding of one's sense door. If a person do not guard one's sense door, the mind will stray to other people's domain, and one will meet with misery and calamity. Buddha give an example. He say, in certain forest, there was a hunter. He set out a trap of peach or tar, the black one, sticky black one, a trap of peach or tar in order to catch monkeys. And those monkeys who are clever and not greedy, when they see this trap, then they avoid from far. But a monkey who is greedy and foolish, approach that trap. And in order, because that trap is covered with a thin layer of food, and he was attracted by that food, due to his craving, in order to get the food to satisfy his desire. So he stretched out his hand, one of his hand, then get caught. And in order to free himself, then he stretched out another hand, other hand. Then both hands get caught. In order to free himself, he stretched out one leg and get caught again. And another leg for get caught. In order to free himself from both hands, both legs, he applied his muscle. His muscle and get caught. So 5 points are caught. When 5 points are caught, then the hunter can do what he want to do. And this monkey suffer deadly. Why this monkey has to suffer? Why? Because he stepped into other people's domain. He stepped into other people's domain. What is other people's domain? Similarly, Buddha say, similarly, anyone, a monk or anyone, if they step into other people's domain or stray into other people's domain, they will meet with calamity, suffering, misery, like the monkey. Then Buddha asked, what are the domain of others? What do you think? What are the domain of others that cause you suffering? Buddha say, form. Form cognized by the eyes. That is sensually enticing, pleasant, agreeable. Sound cognized by the ear, that is sensually enticing, pleasurable, agreeable. Or smell cognized by the nose. Taste cognized by the tongue. Tangible object cognized by the body. And mental object cognized by the mind. They are sensually enticing, agreeable, and pleasing. These are the domain of others, not our domain. But what is our domain? If we step outside our domain and go into this domain of others, we meet with suffering. Therefore, we should not step outside our domain, our resort. So what is our ancestral resort that can protect us? Buddha said, 4 foundations of mindfulness. You know 4 foundations of mindfulness, right? The first one, contemplation of body. Keep the mind into the body. Seeing the body as 4 elements. Earth elements, water elements, fire elements, wind element. And see, this body is merely elements, not a self, not a permanent self. It's only a group of elements. And second one, contemplation of feelings. There are 3 types of feelings: pleasant, unpleasant, and neither pleasant nor unpleasant. So when there is contact from the 6 sense door to 6 sense object, there is pleasant, let's say there's pleasant feeling. When there's pleasant feeling, how can we liberate from this pleasant feeling so that it will not develop into craving? How? Yes, very good. Contemplate impermanent. If you do not contemplate at all the nature of the mind, when there's pleasant feeling, then you want to grasp it. Then it develops into craving. And craving is the origin of all suffering. In the 4 Noble Truths, Buddha say, what's the origin of all suffering? Craving. So in order not to suffer, in order to free ourselves from suffering, when there's pleasant feeling arises, contemplate it as pleasant feeling, pleasant feeling, pleasant feeling is impermanent, 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 impermanence 100 times. After 100 times finished, no more pleasant feeling. Then no more craving. No more craving. Then you safe. You are safe. You are safe. You do not perform karma, unwholesome karma that leave behind karmic energy. That will affect you in the future. Maybe next moment. Maybe, you know, 10 days later, 1 year later, even in maybe 10 years later. Similarly, when this unpleasant feeling arises in you, if you do not contemplate unpleasant feeling as impermanent, or if you do not contemplate unpleasant feeling as not a self, not myself, not mine, 100 times, then our consciousness will think unpleasant feeling as permanent, belong to me, myself, mine. If you grasp unpleasant feeling as permanent as myself, how can you free from this unpleasant feeling? Because unpleasant feeling, one feels sorrow, angry, sorrow, despair, grief, or anger, and so on. If you don't contemplate unpleasant feeling, then it leads to anger, because it's unpleasant. So you want to release, so you release it with anger. Or if you do not contemplate it, your consciousness will think it is permanent, it belongs to me, it's mine, it's myself. Then how can you free yourself from this unpleasant feeling? It's not possible. Right? Therefore, you have to contemplate impermanent 100 times. After you contemplate impermanent, you can carry on again, non-self. Unpleasant feeling is not myself, it's just a mental factor. It's just a feeling as feeling. Feeling is not myself, feeling as feeling. Contemplate it again, again, and again, repeatedly until unpleasant feeling passes away. Then you are safe. You will not perform unwholesome karma due to anger, due to irritation, due to agitation. This is how the Dharma can help you free from the suffering on the spot. No need to wait for tomorrow. On the spot, as long as you know how to apply mindfulness and wisdom. Just mindfulness not enough. Just know unpleasant feeling, not enough. This is called mindfulness. You have to apply wisdom. Tell yourself, unpleasant feeling is impermanent. Unpleasant feeling is impermanent, it's not mine, not myself. So apply both mindfulness and wisdom. Then you are protected. Protected from committing unwholesome karma. And on the spot, you are free from these disturbances. Free from anger, then you feel happy, right? Without anger, you are happy, you are free. Okay. So, and if we do not contemplate this pleasant feeling, then we lust after this pleasant feeling. Okay, may I ask you, have you ever experienced any pleasant feeling that is permanent? No, right? No. So if you crave lust after pleasant feeling, when that pleasant feeling passes away, then unpleasant feeling will take over. Right? Because you love that pleasant feeling so much, you attach to that pleasant feeling so much, now it passes away, you cannot be equanimous. Then you feel very sorry, you feel unhappy, then unpleasant feeling take over. Then because of unpleasant feeling, and you do not know how to, you do not contemplate unpleasant feeling as impermanent, as not a self, then you suffer again. You suffer again, then you become sorrow, grief, lamentation, and you beat your heart, you shed your tears, and so on. So when there is pleasant feeling arises in the mind, you suffer from craving, from lust. When that pleasant feeling disappears, passes away, you suffer again from sorrow, from lamentation, from anger, and so on. So you see, we are suffering all the time, right? Therefore, we have to, in order to make ourselves happy, we have to apply mindfulness and wisdom all the time. Okay. Then, this is what we mean. He directly knows everything. Then Buddha continued to say, having directly known everything, he fully understands everything. Having fully understood everything, whatever feeling he feels, whether pleasant or painful, or neither painful nor pleasant, he abides contemplating impermanence in those feelings. He abides contemplating fading away. This feeling, he contemplating fading away, not lasting, fading away. When you contemplate a pleasant feeling fading away, then you abandon greed, lust. And sometimes he contemplate cessation of that feeling, of that pleasant feeling. When you contemplate cessation, then you abandon arising. When you see cease already, then you abandon arising. Arising is suffering. Arising is suffering. Then if he contemplate relinquishment of that feeling, then he abandon grasping. Contemplate relinquishment of that pleasant feeling. Relinquishment, then he abandoned grasping. Contemplate, so let me say it again. So having directly known everything, he fully understands everything. Having fully understood everything, whatever feeling he feels, whether pleasant or painful or neither, painful nor pleasant, he abides contemplating impermanence in those feelings. Contemplating fading away, contemplating cessation, contemplating relinquishment, contemplating thus, he does not cling to anything in the world. When he does not cling, he is not agitated. When he is not agitated, he personally attains Nibbana. So the goal of the practice, and the goal of the teaching of the Buddha is to abandon the craving or clinging, letting go the craving or clinging. Because when there's clinging, there is agitation. When there's agitation, there's suffering. The mind is not calm, no peace at all, no happiness. So all suffering comes from clinging. We have to attack the root cause in order to gain eternal happiness. So when before craving arises, we contemplate pleasant feeling first. If you can contemplate cessation or relinquishment, impermanent, not lasting of pleasant feeling, then this pleasant feeling will not develop into craving. But if it develops into craving, we still can contemplate craving as impermanent, not self, impermanent, 100 times, million times. If you have that effort. Okay. Then when craving passes away, we are not agitated. When we are not agitated, the mind is liberated, and the mind personally attained Nibbana. So this is the short answer given by the Buddha to the king of the gods. And after the king of the god, listened to this short discourse, he was very happy. So he said, sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. In Asia, when a monk finish a talk, everybody have to call sadhu. So later on, when I finish, you have to call sadhu. Sadhu means well done, rejoice. Rejoice in this precious teaching of the Dharma. So the king of the god says, sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. At that moment, Venerable Moggallana, you know Venerable Moggallana, the left-hand disciple of the Buddha, who is foremost in psychic power. Okay, so Venerable Moggallana heard sadhu, sadhu, sadhu from the god, from the king of the god. At the time, after the Sakka finished rejoice in what Buddha said, then using his psychic power, he went back to the heaven. And Venerable Moggallana want to know how much this Sakka, the king of the god, comprehended the teaching of the Buddha. So he also used his psychic power, follow him, go back to heaven, go to heaven. And at that time, the king of the god Sakka, after came back to his heavenly realm, he enjoyed sensual pleasures with all his female gods. And when Venerable Moggallana arrived there, he felt very embarrassed, very, very embarrassed, because he's enjoying sensual pleasures. Before the Buddha taught him, destroy the craving, you know? Then Venerable Moggallana asked him, can you repeat? And when the king of the god saw Venerable Moggallana, you know, he feel very embarrassed. Anyway, he pay respect to him, you know, and talk to him. Then Moggallana said that my purpose to come here is to hear. I want to hear. What Buddha had shared with you? Can you repeat to me? So the king of the god suddenly cannot remember even one word what he have learned from the Buddha. He tried to squeeze his mind, squeeze his brain. He can't remember even one word. Why? Why he cannot remember at all? Why? Because of enjoyment of sensual pleasures. Because of enjoyment of sensual pleasures, all the wholesome Dharma leave you. All the wholesome Dharma apart from you, depart from you. He is a noble person. He is not ordinary person. He is stream enterer, a noble person, and yet cannot remember even one word what Buddha had taught just now. So you can see the fault of enjoying sensual pleasures. All the good quality will leave you, will depart from you, if you a person enjoying sensual pleasures. And so he feel very embarrassed. He cannot remember at all. Then he tried to lay aside this question. He said, sir, please follow me. I will show you how magnificent my palace is. So he bring Venerable Moggallana and show his palace. Then Moggallana talked to himself. He said, this god is too negligent, very negligent. I have to wake him up. So Moggallana used his psychic power, using one of his toes, touched his palace, and whole palace shook like earthquake. And because of this sudden, accident, and this sudden fear or accident, and all the memory come back to the Sakka's brain. Suddenly he can remember all what Buddha taught because of out of fear, you know, the power, the psychic, the great power of psychic power of Mangalana, and the whole palace shocked. And because of the sense of urgency, all the good memory come back. Then he told Venerable Mangalana, now I can remember. I will repeat to you what Buddha said. So he repeat what Buddha said to him. Then Venerable Mangalana was satisfied. And he left. So this is the end of the talk. Okay, any question? Yes. If you want to ask question, you have to use the mic.
Thank you for coming, Sister. I had a question. You mentioned mental phenomena were the source of outside pleasure, outside of your domain, but at the same time, it's one of the four foundations. Could you explain that a little more, please?
Mental phenomena is number fourth foundation, number fourth foundation of mindfulness. Mental phenomena, including cover many aspects. It covers five hindrances. You know five hindrances? For example, sloth and torpor. When sloth and torpor arise in us, then we must apply mindfulness and mindfulness and wisdom. Not impermanent. Mindfulness, not a self. So same as restlessness, doubt, and so on. So this is contemplating phenomena. Internally, our five hindrances. Yeah, this is our domain. And four noble truth also. When suffering arises in you, then we try to investigate what's the cause of suffering. Then we know it's craving. Then we contemplate craving is impermanent, not a self. Contemplate the fault, the danger of craving, so that we can get rid of it. And another one is sense basis. Another one of mental phenomena is sense basis. When I come to contact with visible object or sound, come to contact with ear, then whatever factor, whatever defilements that arise, then we contemplate it. Defilements arise in our mind, right? We didn't go to other people's domain. If you go to the form, pleasant agreeable form, then we go to other people's domain. But we go to our own mental phenomena. So any defilements that arise due to contact of six sense basis with six sense object, we note it, apply wisdom, apply mindfulness and wisdom. Is it clear? Okay.
Thank you very much. I think I need an earthquake because I forgot already a few things. But you said something where one can learn about cause and effect from the past.
Yes.
And I wonder how, I didn't understand that.
Okay. It's very common that you don't understand. When a person practices concentration, deep concentration, very deep concentration, then he develops the ability to recollect his past life. When he developed the ability to recollect his past life, then all the event, all the actions he had performed in the past life will appear. Then that event will relate to the happening in the present life. Then you understand, why now I suffer? Because of one misdeed I performed in the past. So this deed is caused. The suffering now I undergo is effect. So he sees the cause and effect. This you need, many people can see it. In my monastery, many people can see the cause and effect. of, and not only suffering, sometimes happiness. The happiness you have in this life, for example, some people in this life, they have much more happiness than others, you know. So if he can develop his concentration and see in the past life, then he will find out, he will find the causes that cause so much happiness in this present life. Then he see the cause and effect. Okay. This is practical experience. Huh? Theoretically, you just understand in this way, but practically, you have to see yourself. Buddha's teaching is come and see, not come and believe. Come and see. How can you see? You practice, you see. Without practice, you cannot see. Okay, there's one more question.
Something I've always wondered, is it possible to experience pleasure without the attachment?
Okay, good.
And I guess sort of a correlate to that, is the idea that if you let go of the pleasure or it disappears out of contemplating the impermanence, or it's not you, is there a level of bliss or something that's beyond the pleasure? Is that the point?
Yes, okay. So when you, let's say you contemplate impermanent of that pleasure, right? Let's say pleasurable feeling. You contemplate impermanent. Then when you see it really pass away, you experience another type of pleasant. That pleasant feeling is not tainted with sensual pleasure. We have two types of pleasure. One is tainted with sensual pleasure. One is spiritual pleasure.
Okay, I can get that. But can you still enjoy the pleasurable pleasure and you still not really enjoy? Or is that like not really?
You mean can you enjoy the spiritual pleasure and yet not attached?
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, is that possible? Or you're saying it's inevitable to develop the desire to crave?
Okay. Let me repeat again. So for example, when we are enjoying sensual pleasures, a lot of pleasant feeling, but we don't want to develop this pleasant feeling up to clinging and craving and clinging, so we contemplate this pleasurable feeling as impermanent. And later on, when this, because of knowledge, wisdom, of contemplating impermanent of sensual pleasure feeling, then we enjoy, we have another type of pleasurable feeling that is not tainted with sensual pleasures. Why? And this is not tainted because it's come from the wisdom. Wisdom sees the impermanence. Wisdom can produce a lot of happiness and light, like brilliant light also. Rapture also. Joy, pity, rapture also. So that type of pleasant, we call spiritual pleasant feeling. People also will get attached to that spiritual pleasant feeling. Therefore, when you have that spiritual pleasant feeling, if you want to get attached to it, you also have to contemplate it as impermanent. But some people feel that if I contemplate whatever pleasurable feeling as impermanent, then I cannot enjoy the life. I cannot enjoy any pleasant feeling anymore. That is very difficult for me, right? But you must see the danger in enjoyment. That, because that enjoyment gives rise to more and more lust, more and more craving, more and more clinging. And all this more and more craving, clinging are the cause of all suffering. You must see in this way, only then you will be refrained from enjoying too much sensual pleasures.
This is a related question.
Mm-hmm.
So I've renounced, you know, quite a bit. I've given up some things, but I'm still a lay person.
Mm-hmm.
Can a lay person achieve nirvana?
Okay, achieve nirvana, which level? We have four levels, stream entrance, stream entrance, once returner, non-returner, arahant. Which one you want? Which one you mention? Highest level, arahant?
Yeah, just curious.
It's very difficult. Very, very difficult.
Really need to renounce
it. Yeah, renounce it, because when you renounce, then you have full time. You are not connected with family bondage, you know. Then no association with many people. Your mind is, you live in seclusion, so you can fully concentrate your mind on your meditation subject. Only then your mind become very clear. Then insight arose. Then you see things as they really are. Any distraction from external, family, business, friend, all are disturbances. If a person want to go for intensive meditation, retreat. In Buddha's time, a lay person can attain up to a non-returner, but very, very few. In Buddha's time. But Buddha's time, during Buddha's time 2600 ago, there's no iPad, there's no telephone, there's no movie, there's no, we don't have, at that time, no so much sensual pleasures. So people can practice more smoothly without much difficulty. Now you can see your life in America, so much impingement, right? External impingement, you get lost sometimes. So much movie going on, Hollywood movie, and all the advertisement, all the iPhone, iPad, computer, and so on. So even Buddha's time, very difficult to attain non-returner as layperson. Not to speak nowadays. Okay, you. Okay.
I'm just wondering if you could please explain what you mean by see things as they really are.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay, seeing things as they really are. If you are insight meditator, you must know what is this meaning, seeing things as they really are. The goal of practice is to see things as they really are. What are the things as they really are? Impermanent, suffering, and non-self. Okay? And impermanent, suffering, and non-self of what? Of what? Of mind and body. Or another word, five aggregates. Buddha said, according to the Four Noble Truths, what is the origin of suffering? Five aggregates of clinging. What's the truth of suffering? Five aggregates of clinging is the truth of suffering. So when you come to practice, we want to see things as they really are, as they really are. We want to see these five aggregates as impermanent, suffering, and non-self, so that we can give up the craving for these five aggregates. When you give up the craving for these five aggregates, so when the five aggregates change, when the body change, become old, sick, your mind is not agitated, because you already give up the craving to the body. Similarly, when the feeling change, your mind will not be agitated, because you already given up the craving for the feelings, for the pleasant feeling and unpleasant feeling. And also your consciousness or mental state, when they change, you also will not be agitated, because you have given up all the craving towards all the mental states. So when there's no agitation, you personally attain Nibbana. This is what Buddha said. Okay? So seeing things as they really are is to see five aggregates, or another word, mind and body, as impermanent, suffering, and non-self, to the extent one let go completely, the craving of them. This is the goal of meditation. The goal we want to achieve. Okay?
Thank you, sister. I have so many questions, but mm-hmm. I'll try to limit to two. But I wanted to follow on the question mm-hmm. from the other side of the room.
Okay.
You know, the Buddhist time, obviously, many, many lay people attain stream entry.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering whether, in your experience, do you think that that's still something that's within reach of modern lay people? And also, the practice that we do here, you know, we focus very much on mindfulness as lay people. And I was wondering what you thought about the role of concentration. You know, should we be working on developing concentration too as part of our practice?
Mm, okay, good. I think for lay people to reach the stream enterer is possible, but depend on how much time you devote to the practice, right? If you devote, let's say 8 hours per day, okay, I think it's possible. But if you devote only 1 hour per day, I think it's far away from it. It depends on how much effort you put in as a lay person. If you one day you can put 8 hours in, or you can keep your mind always with the meditation subject, whatever you do, I think it's possible. But you also need to develop concentration. Because Buddha say, a concentrated mind sees things as they really are. Again, sees things as they really are. If the mind is scattered, how can the Dharma manifest itself? Therefore, Buddha said in one of the sutta, when the mind is concentrated, the Dharma will manifest itself. Therefore, concentration is necessary. You know the normal eightfold path, right? Okay, normal eightfold path. What's the first one? Right view. Second one, right thought. These two consist of wisdom training. The third one, right action, right livelihood, and right speech. These three consist of morality training, And the last three, right effort, right mindfulness, and right concentration. So if you don't practice concentration, mean you practice only noble seven path. One path is lacking, one path is missing. And if this path is not important, then Buddha teach noble seven path enough. Right? Why should he teach noble eightfold path? Therefore, concentration is important and is necessary. It's just that because Americans do not emphasize it, therefore it is ignored. Concentration is not emphasized in America doesn't mean that it's not important. Right? Because here very few people practice concentration, even in Asia too. Very difficult because it takes a longer time to develop concentration. Mindfulness is very easy to develop. Everybody want easy job. Okay.
I have a question.
Okay.
Can you explain when you say not educated?
Not agitated.
Agitated.
Yeah. The mind is not agitated.
Agitated.
Yeah.
Thank you. I couldn't understand. Educated.
Sorry for my broken English.
Thank you very much. I was just curious on, you mentioned mindfulness. You mentioned it quite a bit. Within mindfulness without wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
Is not really the practice is to have wisdom behind mindfulness.
Yes.
Because without wisdom, it's really not complete.
Yes, exactly. Yes.
So there isn't an effort of wisdom that has to be applied to mindfulness.
Yes. That's why I often say, in Michigan, while I was in Michigan, almost every talk I say, mindfulness alone is not enough. Something is missing. What's missing? Wisdom. And also concentration. A concentrated mind sees things as they really are. Okay. So, since mindfulness is so popular here, I think this one ingredient is not enough. When you cook something, some food, to make your food tasty, you have to put different ingredients. So you have to add one more, two more. Concentration and wisdom. Only then your practice is complete. I have to tell the truth. As a monastic, I have to tell the truth. Whether my audience like to hear or not. I'm responsible for the correct teaching of the Buddha.
Okay. Well, sister, thank you for your teaching, and I'm so fortunate to hear you a second time. I have a question. We've been kind of on a plane up here, so maybe my question is a little bit more down here. I have a problem with anger. And I'm wondering what kind of practical things. I know we have these goals that are way up here, but just in our everyday, how to deal with this kind of mental state. I've tried saying impermanent since I heard you talk yesterday. I've tried it today. And it goes away a little bit, and then it kind of comes back a little bit, and then it goes away a little bit, comes back a little bit. So maybe I'm not convinced of the impermanence.
You mean the anger goes away, comes back, goes away, comes back?
Yes.
I think it's improving, right?
Yes, it has improved, thank you.
Yeah, and you only apply one day. See?
Yes, thank you.
So if you apply constantly, then you are bound to succeed. Just have confidence. Just have confidence in it, right? You see, you tell yourself. I don't tell you. You tell yourself. You are comes and go, comes and go. You are progressing already. So if you keep on doing the same thing, then you will see the effect very fast. If you all want shortcut, there is a shortcut. Contemplate impermanent. The effect is tremendous. Okay. And if possible, sometimes try to catch before anger arises. Before anger arises, if you can note that unpleasant feeling first, then the chance for anger to arise will become less. Then you don't have to work so hard to tackle the anger. But in order to have such fast mindfulness, precise mindfulness, to know every minute mental state that arises in the mind, you need concentration. Without concentration, you cannot, because mind is very fast. All pleasant feeling, all mental state arise so fast. So if you don't practice concentration 1 hour a day, not possible. You can catch the change of the mind so fast. So if you want your contemplation to be more effective, please practice concentration as well, 1 hour a day.
Thank you so much, sister.
Okay.
I just wanted to understand more the technique of concentration, since that is something that we should be practicing.
What technique?
Yes, the specifics of how to practice concentration.
Okay, so I start to see people interested in concentration. There are many ways to practice concentration. Loving kindness is also one type of concentration practice. Mindfulness of breathing is also one type of concentration practice. But to practice concentration, you need to learn from a competent teacher. The popular one is mindfulness of breathing. The technique is very easy. Just be mindful of in-breath and out-breath. Whatever thoughts, restlessness arise, whatever hindrances that arise, ignore. Just ignore. Then always come back to the breath Mindfully breathe in, breathe out, keep the attention under the nostril at all time. Then gradually all the scattering mind, wandering mind will come to cessation and the mind become fully one-pointedness on the breath. At that time you feel very peaceful. The mind is very clear, calm, radiant, light, rapture, joyful. But it takes time. Okay?
I'm interested in, thank you so much. Again, I was with my four-year-old grandson this morning, and I'm thinking about how you talked about not moving out of your own domain. And I realize that I'm not clear on that exactly, staying in your own domain. So I'm thinking about, as I was interacting and reading a story, which, and it was a very pleasant interaction, so much love, and how it affects, I'm thinking of my eight grandchildren, how it affects them as I lose my own, move out of my own domain. And so I'm thinking of what would be a practical way, something practical.
Okay. I think you can show your love, metta, you know, to your grandson, you know, grandchildren. You have, as a grandma, you have to show your love and the to them. But you also have to check your attachment. If you have strong attachment to them, and let's say if something happened to them, then you suffer. You will suffer a lot. You know, you will suffer greatly. So from time to time, you have to check your attachment. Metta and attachment is different. Metta, you have metta to them, but you do not cling to them. You must see the difference. If you still have strong clinging to them, attachment to them, then if something misery or misfortune fall upon them, I think you are the one who will suffer, right? So at the time, you will step into other people's domain. So you still can love them, but you have to check your attachment. There can be love without attachment. Buddha loved all of us. Buddha, the Lord Buddha, loved all sentient beings, but he has no attachment to them.
Okay. I want to thank Sister for coming, and I'm going to close it here so we have time to look at her books out there. Register books. She will be here to sign the books. If you want to go out and buy it, bring it back, she'll sign it. And the Donna Bass.